All right, welcome back, everybody, to the Building and Life Young Athletes podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Renicki. Thanks so much for stopping by. If we haven't met yet, I'm a dual board certified physician in sports medicine and family medicine, and I love talking about all things health. And the goal of this podcast is to help keep you active and healthy for life through actionable, evidence-informed education. And today, we're kind of taking a little break from our normal series, right? So typically what I'll do is kind of do seasons so that when you search things on the podcast, they're easy to find, they're kind of put together, they make sense as opposed to random podcasts. But we're going to do a couple of random podcasts now. So for the next couple of weeks, I'm going to go through kind of some cultural updates, I'll call them. You know, a lot of times I plan on all my seasons, I go through them, I look at them and say, hey, you know, what I want to kind of look at and dive deeper on and do that. And then a lot of times that kind of covers a couple of months. And then during that time, there's things that happen and news articles that come out that I want to talk about. So today I'm going to kind of talk about some one of the articles that I've seen come through and just make the runs all over social media. I saw it kind of just going everywhere. So we're kind of just doing talk about it, what I think about it, and kind of going in real time here. So what we're actually going to do is we're going to look at a study, and it's really is a poster that was presented, and kind of go through how I read it, how I interpret it, and kind of what to think about it. So let's dive right into it. We're going to go do this live. So the first thing we're going to do is the name of the study is an association of 8-hour time-restricted eating with all-cause and cause-specific mortality. And this is by Chen and colleagues coming from Shanghai Jiao Tong University and with Northwestern and Harvard as well. And this is a poster. So first things first, this is a poster. This means it's not a full study. It's just a poster. A lot of times what you do in the academic world is, you know, you have some sort of research and you put it together and you create a poster with kind of like the highlights, right? It's just kind of like the highlights of what's going on. And you present it at some sort of event, whether it's a conference or whatnot. And you present it and then you say, okay, this is what we found. It's a big overview. And then eventually you usually write it up and then publish it. And so this is not peer-reviewed literature yet. That will come after this where you write it up, do the whole formal thing, big paper, and then it can take months after this. So it can take 6-12 months. So it's coming out now and made big headlines, and we'll talk about it later. I don't even know why they're doing that, because I mean, a paper, there's pretty much no reason to publish huge headlines based off of just a like an abstract. Like literally there's so many different posters throughout the world. You go there, you present, and it's like, okay, cool. And no idea like if they're any good or not at all. Like they literally might never publish this, who knows? And so to make a big deal of it, I kind of spoiler alert, there's nothing to make of this, but let's walk through and kind of see what it talks about here. So their introduction says, hey, time restricted eating, it's gained lots of popularity. And, you know, it's limiting your food consumption between 4 and 12 hours. And most short-term RCTs show that some sort of 8-hour time restricted window seems to improve cardiometabolic risk factors. So they want to say, hey, is it important and does it actually help? So what they're looking at here was, you know, does time-restricted eating or 8-hour time-restricted eating, they think it's going to be associated with lower all-cause mortality. And so that's specifically looking for cause-specific mortality, meaning cardiovascular and all-cause. So if we bust in here to the methods section, so what they did is they used NHANES data, so National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey. That's a big survey. They have a big food questionnaire saying, hey, what did you eat? It's a ton of people. So it's essentially food recall database. And we're looking at there, and this is going from 2003 to 2018, and there are 43,000 possible there. And they also use the National Death Index through December 2019. So they're comparing, obviously, to check on mortality. You got to check on if people died. So that's what they're doing there. And then here you can see exclusion criteria, meaning people who had an unreliable dietary recall, meaning not sure, or if they had extreme energy intakes, men like less than 800 or more than 8,000 for males, or less than 600, less than 6,000 for females. That's huge. So, and then if they had an unusual diet on the recall day, meaning it's not what they normally ate, or I don't know how they necessarily know that unusual diet, or they didn't follow, they weren't able to follow them up. So after doing all the exclusion criteria, we had left with about 20,000 people. And then what they did is they kind of broke them up into different categories here. They used eating duration as kind of the categories they're dividing into. So they use the average of 2 dietary recall days. So 2 days. So apparently what you eat for 2 days is what you eat for your entire life, but that's what it looked like. And they broke them in these groups of less than 8 hours, 8 to 10 hours, 10 to 12 hours, 12 to 16, and greater than 16. And the 12 to 16 is kind of the reference, meaning, hey, you know, you're eating from 7 in the morning till 7 at night. Like that's your whole window. Essentially, it's not concentrated. Whereas we get lower, like less than 8 hours, that is kind of, where we're getting in that time restricted window. We're like, hey, I'm just eating for these 8 hours. And then mortality outcomes, they looked at all-cause death, cardiovascular death, and cancer death. So, and then on the bottom there, I talked about the specific models that they used for statistical methods. And if we swing it up over here, next we're going to talk about the baseline characteristics of the study. So this is kind of helpful to say, hey, who are we looking at? What are we seeing here? Like I mentioned before, 20,000 people sample size, and these are the different categories. As you can see, the less than 8 hour or time restricted feeding group is by far and away the smallest. So 414 only there compared to other groups that are, you know, all over 1,000, some into the 11,000 here for 12 to 16. So that's the you know, the standard reference group, but this is definitely smaller. Looking at proportionally here, this, when we look at a table like this, we just want to see, hey, like, are they kind of the same? You know, overall age was 48. This one skewed a little younger. Hey, 41 for less than eight. So that looks a little bit different than the other ones. Are all up in the 47s, 40s, 44s. In terms of men, a little bit skewing, kind of normal there. In terms of race, look at black versus white, and overall kind of general-ish ballpark. And then current smoking, if you notice here that the less than 8 hours group were the highest smokers there by a decent bit, by about 7%. And current drinking seems pretty standard as well. And then BMI, it was the highest BMI, not much higher than the other one, but 29.9 and the highest as well. And then cardiovascular and cancer seem to be relatively mixed. So overall, a couple factors that you see there, I assume that in their study, they're going to correct for that, right? So anytime you do any sort of cohort observational study, you use mathematical models to kind of correct for that, saying, hey, we understand there's some differences here, so we're going to try to adjust for that in their analysis. But let's move down to different kind of results here now. So looking at here, this chart here is looking at different hazard ratios. So this is again the all-cause mortality. And the biggest thing here is you kind of look at events, right? So the outcome they're coming here is hazard ratio. So they put it as 1.26 is what it is. So the reference is what we're using here. When reference means that's like 1.0, meaning like, hey, this is what we're comparing it to. That's like average risk. So we're assuming that from the 12 to 16, that's what we're looking at. That's average. And then from there, the hazard ratios, anything above one shows that there's a higher association with this outcome, meaning all cause mortality here. So essentially saying, hey, 1.26, that is, you know, in this intermittent fasting group, that's going to be the highest risk because all the other ones are 1.14, 1.05, and then 0.99, which is essentially null there. But they're saying 1.26, it's the highest. But then you look over here and look at this hazard ratio chart, and you can see here, this is what we call the confidence interval. Confidence interval is like, hey, how real are these results? Meaning the confidence interval is like the area where which the numbers could lie in, like the actual number. So we're guessing, right? We're making statistical models on this saying, hey, we think this is what we see. We think this is the pattern in the noise, but a confidence interval tells us that, you know, within this, this is a 95% confidence interval. There's a 95% chance of the real number being inside this interval. And the wider the interval, the less we can rely on those numbers, meaning like it's huge. And if you see here, these intervals are pretty darn wide. Specifically, what's happening is they're crossing one. And when we cross one, that means we can't definitively say there's no association with that. So as you can see here, crossing one, all the p-values as well, none of them cross 0.05, the significance level. So all these are crossing here. Even this one, just tiny, this little one, this 8 to 10 hour with people with cardiovascular disease, almost there at significance, but it's not. So overall, for all cause mortality, there didn't seem to be any sort of difference between whether you are eating less than 8 hours or that. So that's like a good one to look at, because we'll go into the next one, which is what the main, you know, everyone, big results are out. So looking at cardiovascular mortality, this is the one where people start to go bananas. And so you can see here right away, looking at our less than 8 hours, and the hazard ratio is 1.91 and our p-value is 0.006. So not 0.06, 0.006, meaning that is statistically significant and does not pass the confidence interval of one. And so we're saying, hey, like our confidence interval doesn't pass one. And so we're saying, hey, that is significant, and that's statistically significant, meaning there is signal, not noise. Something's going on there, is what they say. And the other ones here, 0.15, 0.26, don't. So they're saying just for that less than 8 hour one, that seems to have significance. And I apologize for anybody listening on the audio version. I realize I'm pointing lots of things. But overall, there's a dotted line, and if the line crosses it, then it's not significant. But this one for the intermittent fasting group did not cross, so that means it's statistically significant. And what they found was a hazard ratio of 1.91, which means, you know, the headlines were all like 91% more likely to die from cardiovascular disease with intermittent fasting. So that's where this came from. And if we look at it here, we're looking at 414 total people and 31 instances. It was about 7% total incidence. Whereas you compare to the reference, it was about 3%. So it's about a 4% difference, but that's like, you know, overall in terms of what actual events were happening. But it's significant statistically. So it's like, oh my gosh, 91%. But in reality, I mean, we're sampling 414 of these people as opposed to 11,000. Like, what would happen if we sample 11,000 of those people? I guess we'll never know, but that's where that headline comes from right there, that simple 1.91, and that's how they extrapolate it and blow it up and say, this is what's going on. So just something to consider when we're looking at that. And then cancer mortality, they looking at here, overall, didn't have a whole lot going on here as well. It was, look at the p-values, nothing really, 0.05 or less. So there's no real significant difference for cancer mortality as well. And with the, just jumping real quick back to the cardiovascular, I mentioned that less than 8 hours for the overall sample, but they also found it with people with cardiovascular disease and with cancer were more likely to die from cardiovascular disease. So pretty much anybody in any, the intermittent fasting group, you know, quote unquote intermittent fasting, because we'll talk about that, but that seemed to happen. And then if you go down here, the summary, kind of the conclusions are saying, hey, the 8 hour time restricted feeding was not associated with all cause or cancer mortality compared with eating duration of 12 to 16, which is kind of the one we talked about, the reference one. And then the 8 hour one was significantly associated with cardiovascular mortality in the general population and with those with CVD and cancer. So like we mentioned, we had statistical significance in all those. And they said specifically an eating duration of greater than 16 hours per day was associated with lower risk of cancer mortality in people with cancer. And then the findings here require replication, but do not support long-term use of an 8 hour time-restricted eating for prevention of cardiovascular death, nor for improving longevity. And so that's kind of the takeaway there, that, hey, these studies need to be replicated in that. And so it's a big thing. Let's talk about a couple caveats here. First things first, this is not a published study that we mentioned, so we can't go in there and look there and see additional things. So that's number one. But hey, I want to give props where props are due, because like, this is science, right? This is how it happens, is we present something, we have our findings, and hopefully they publish paper on it. But like, I see people ripping on this, like, this isn't paper. You know what? Like, this is how it starts. And I don't know how many people in the lay public have ever done a poster. Probably not many people. It takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of effort. And so kudos to this group for doing research, because this is how everything starts, is we start with some sort of idea and do a research project. And maybe this is paradigm shifting. Probably not, be my guess. But hey, you got to do it. And props off to them for doing that. So, but there are a couple caveats. And so we can't fully review the paper because it's not out. First things first is, you know, we're using NHANES data, which is food recall questionnaires, which can be relatively accurate, but always leaves some room for subjectivity and accuracy issues. I mean, you're like, how much do they really know what's going on there? That's kind of what it is. But another caveat is, you know, when did intermittent fasting become popular? If you look back here, this is looking at 2003 to 2018. And I know back in 2003, there was no biohacker community saying that intermittent fasting makes you live forever or anything like that. So the real thing is, these people who were quote unquote fasting, why did they have a different eating pattern, right? Like, was it a conscious choice, or do they have some sort of additional thing that was going on? Like, did they do that because they had like poor eating habits in general? Like, oh, they don't eat breakfast, and like they ate randomly. When they ate, they like binge ate and they had a bunch of more calories. And so we don't really know. And so I highly, highly doubt that the people who are intermittent fasting today, who are very health conscious, I don't think this is the same sample that we're looking at there. So for me right away, it's like, okay, that doesn't necessarily line up. And on top of that is, we have no idea of how many calories people ate, right? So the whole point of intermittent fasting is you reduce your caloric intake, right? It's a way to control our calories. And if we are intermittent fasting, but then eating well above surplus, then like, it doesn't really matter what you're doing, because you're still above that. Is it possible that these people who were intermittent fasting ate fewer meals, but actually had more like calorie consumption? They were just like gorging? Absolutely, that's possible. And then the idea here is, anytime we're looking at any sort of cohort stuff, we can have reverse causality, meaning like, hey, we find a signal from the noise of, but it's really confused, meaning, hey, maybe those who already had heart disease had quote unquote worse or different eating behaviors than other people at baseline. So maybe something that they do innately kind of led them there. And it's really challenging. This is not calorie equated as well. So no idea how many calories, did smoking matter, all these things that play an effect. So from this, my takeaway from this is, I think the headlines, this is the problem with scientific, journalism, is you take this literally a poster and go over there and extrapolate it to the world. Saying that's what, I mean, I've done numerous posters, and a lot of times the data, I've been there, I've seen, thousands of posters. The data is very wide ranging and doesn't necessarily mean it's the highest quality evidence. Once again, not taking that away from this person and people who worked hard, congrats on that. But to take that and then jump and say, it causes a 91% increase in mortality from cardiovascular, like, that's just such a leap, and it's just sensationalism. It's just trying to buy for clicks. And that's why I'm sure this video won't go viral, because it's not sexy and I'm not saying, oh my gosh, but it's totally different. And then for me, the reason I can't extrapolate this, because you have to think about what study population we're looking at here. So NHANES, kind of a big overall people back from 2003 to 2018. That is very, very different from the current community now. So if you are, you know, very interested in your health, you're listening to podcasts like this, you're watching YouTube videos and you're taking health in your own hands and you like intermittent fasting because it helps you control your calories or you believe it's doing something else for you, like you've learned a lot and you've done that for a specific reason. Whereas these people, this is not the case. This is not an intentional intermittent fasting thing, doing it for these benefits. Because the people who intermittent fast intentionally have a whole slew of characteristics that make them healthy as well, right? They're conscious of what they eat, how much they eat, exercise, you know, lifestyle, they're probably not smoking, all these things that group together. And then whereas these people who did it during this time, maybe they had all the other unhealthy things. They smoke more, they were more sedentary, like all these things. There's just so many factors that are challenging. So to look back retrospectively and say, it was this that caused this, it's impossible to do. It literally is impossible to do from this. And on top of that, I don't know how much this matters. You know, I think it's cool. I think it's cool science. And I just wanted to bring my thoughts into this and kind of dissect a paper and say, hey, this is how I look at it. This is what I think about it. I think everything is worthwhile of reading. You kind of process it, understand it from here. This doesn't change my view on intermittent fasting. I don't think it's magic. I think it's a way of controlling your calories, which is important. Are there other benefits that may be present as well? Yeah, I think that's it's possible. I think there's probably some more data that needs to be had before we can definitively say that. But overall, I don't think it's a negative thing. I think it's a net positive as long as we're hitting that kind of calorie limit. And so overall, cool. If intermittent fasting works for you, go for it. I'm not going to stop you. I think it's totally fine. But this doesn't change my practice. You know, no one, you know, observation study really should change practice. You know, I don't think this is practice changing at all, but it's cool to talk about. And I want to at least take my, you know, my viewpoint on this and kind of say, hey, this is what I think about when I see things like this, these sensational things, kind of how I rationalize it. But that's all we got today. It's a little quick one, but thanks so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it. If you enjoyed this, please sign up for my mailing list. I'll let you know when stuff comes out intermittently. I will never spam you, I promise, because I hate spam. But thanks so much for stopping by today. Now get off your phone, get outside, have a great rest of your day. We'll see you next time. Disclaimer, this podcast is for entertainment, education, and informational purposes only. The topics discussed should not solely be used to diagnose, treat, or prevent any condition. The information presented here was created with an evidence-based approach, but please keep in mind that science is always changing, and at the time of listening to this, there may be some new data that makes this information incomplete or inaccurate. Always seek the advice of your personal physician or qualified healthcare provider for questions regarding any medical condition.